From the moment I heard Frau say I had a clone, I knew that I'd be safe because I'd never be alone. An evil doctor shouldn't speak a lot about his feelings. My hurt and my pain don't make me too appealing. I hope Scott would look up to me. Run the business of the family. Have an evil empire just like Zero Dad. Give him my love and the things I never had. Scott would think I was a cool guy. Return the love I have. Make me want to cry. Be evil. But have my feelings too. Change my life with Oprah and Maya Angelou. But Scott rejected me. C'est la vie. Life is cruel. Treat you unfairly. Even so, I God, there must be mini me. You complete me.
Just the two of us. You can make it if you try.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
All right, salutations, happy holidays, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. My mouth is so juicy today.
Ew.
It is. It's like very watery. But anyway, welcome to the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my co-host, but today we only have one, starting with...
And ending with, hey, y'all, it's Nick or Trish.
And welcome you all to The Dish. So, I'm very juicy today. Quick note, Chris has the night off. He has finals. And, as you know, we've been pushing him to make sure he gets his education, and that's very important. So he's got finals. He couldn't be here. He's got a paper that he needs to write and submit tonight to be graded tomorrow. So he's very busy. We're super proud of him. And so we're holding the fort. We're holding it down.
For 2 weeks in a row. God,
I know,
it's exhausting.
Right? So
our listeners are like, God, bring Chris back.
I'm tired of these two crazy queens.
Literally.
But no, it's going to be a fun show. We've got several stories that we're going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
And we also have Dr. Evan Goldstein, who's going to join us for today's installment of Tales from the Tale.
And let me tell you, it is a tale.
That's awesome. I can't wait. I'm excited. I always love seeing him. Mm-hmm. And I wish there was a way. I'm going to find a way. And when we have Dr. Evan Goldstein on the show, that you guys can see him in that TV behind us. I'm going to figure out a way of how to route video.
Because that man.
He is gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Sure he is. But yeah.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. I love him.
I'm actually really excited. So me and Chris have been working. I don't know if I should say this in case it falls through, but I'm going to say it out loud. Because maybe
hopefully
if
it'll come true.
Yeah, maybe if I say it out loud, it'll come true. So me and Chris have been working with Bespoke Surgical to go and actually see Dr. G, and we're going next month to meet him and talk to him. And actually, we're both going to have an exam, and he's going to do a Tales from the Tale on one of our holes.
Maybe I should go and have my hole investigated, too.
No.
You're gonna find a lot.
But I'm really excited to meet him in person. Like, honestly, like, you should come, because it would be, it's just like, I feel like we should go, and then because it's an afternoon appointment, it's like at the end of the day, and then we should maybe all like grab a drink or dinner or something. I would love to just spend some time with him as like, I don't know, colleagues, I guess, because that's kind of what we are.
Yeah, I mean, we
I'm a medical professional.
Well, think about it.
I take pills.
Yeah, of course he is. No, but we have been collaborating with Bespoke Surgical and Dr. G since March of last year.
Mm-hmm.
This March, not only is it going to be our 3-year anniversary, right, on March 7th, but it'll also be an anniversary for a year that we've been working in conjunction with Bespoke Surgical to get some much needed and important information.
Is it going to be a year?
Yeah.
When?
March.
Well, was it in March that we started?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So time flies when you're on Prozac.
Girl.
I say that all the time.
I know. I'm not on Prozac.
Neither am
time
I.
Keeps
I'm just
flying,
saying.
So.
That's just a saying that Bette Midler has a song that it's called I Look Good, right? And she's like talking, and she sort of kind of talks through half of the song, and then she swears and sings through the rest of the song. But there's a part in the live version of the song that I watched on YouTube, in where she's walking candidly down the stage, and she just looks at the crowd. She goes like, "You know what? sugar pumpkins, time flies when you're on Prozac. And I never forgot that line, and I just freaking love it. So I use it all the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love her.
I mean, like,
if you ever get to see her live, do it. She's amazing. She's one of those few entertainers that really just really go all out, you know? And she's also very big in the gay community. And when you think about it, her career started in the gay bathhouses.
She's very active. She's not big. She's actually lost a lot of weight.
Well, no, she's not big in that sense, but she's massive.
I'm just fucking with you. Community. I love you.
I'm going to cut you. I love Ben.
Oh, wait. I said I'd be nice to you today. I'm sorry.
You did. You did.
I'm sorry.
So, two shots in, rules go out the door. But anyway, so before we get started, as we always do, we always like to suggest a cocktail. And I'm going to toss it over to Nicholas for him to.
So, Chris isn't. Chris isn't here tonight. And, I mean, obviously everybody knows there's a couple cocktails that I actually hate that have to do with rum. I hate rum. I just don't like it. But so this is a very important cocktail, especially that we're coming up on Christmas. We're gonna tell you about a eggnog recipe. And you know what's great about it is it can be served in a martini glass, which is way classier than putting it in any other glass. It makes you look just
or a solo cup.
I mean, it depends on whatever you want, but I mean, if it were me, I'd be like, put in a martini glass.
I will tell you something, though. When I go to parties, if you give me something in a solo cup, we have issues. Like, seriously.
Well, I mean,
it's got to be a clear, like, you know those like, clear plastic cups that look like glass, but it's really not. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
It's more of like a little fancier type of plastic cup.
Well, you're also at an age at which if somebody's handing you a solo cup, you probably shouldn't be at that party.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're going to invite me because I'm popular and people love you, like they love me, just make sure you have a glass for me somewhere.
So from now on, Tom is going to be bringing those plastic clear glasses to any party he goes to.
That's right.
All right. So
I'll have them in my car.
So your rum holiday eggnog recipe. So it requires one large egg, two teaspoons.
No, say that in Spanish. Huevos.
One grande huevos.
Sí. Thank you.
2 teaspoons of super fine sugar.
Azúcar. No. Azúcar.
Azúcar.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's
Nick. I guess I'm learning something tonight.
Oh, she's going to take that test tomorrow.
1 ounce of heavy cream, and that's not Tommy.
Crema espesa.
1/2 teaspoon of pure almond extract. 1/2 teaspoon of pure vanilla extract.
Vainilla.
1.5 ounces of Mount Gay. And of course, it has to be Mount Gay because we're gay.
Montaña
rum. Gay. Uh-huh. Garnish with grated cinnamon and nutmeg.
Canela. I don't know how to say nutmeg in Spanish.
So this is actually super in depth, but basically you have to actually like beat the egg and make a whole bunch of shit with all the sugar and all that stuff. And we'll put the recipe on our post. But once the concoction is actually made, because it'll take me like 15 minutes to walk through this whole recipe. Add rum
and
garnish. Put it in a cocktail glass and enjoy. But we will be putting the entire recipe on our post for this evening. It's just like, I don't want to tell you how to beat an egg right now. Like, it's a lot of work.
It's probably a lot better than when you beat your face.
You got to use whisks in this recipe. You got to...
Do you use whisk when you beat your face? When you get ready in the morning?
No, because that would leave lines.
She's nasty. What do you use?
When I get ready in the morning?
Sponges or do you...
No.
Puffs.
No. Okay. I know we all talk about my Bondo.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really use that much stuff. I use a color correcting.
I'm doing a really good close-up right now.
A color correcting base. And I could share that with listeners if they want what it is. I'm not going to do that right now.
I want it!
And it's just, I do 2 squirts, and I dab it across my face, and then I rub it all in. After my hair is done, my hair has to be done first.
Okay.
And then the only other thing I do is I take a blending brush, and I make sure that everything's blended so I don't have any lines.
So he doesn't walk around looking like a vampire.
Well, no, it's because like no matter what you put on your skin... It's never going to be exactly the right match to your skin tone. So I put a color corrector on my skin because I want my face to look more even than it does. You know what I mean? Like, you have blemishes, little red marks, whatever it is, and it just evens everything out. And then the only thing that the brush does, because I don't add anything with the brush, is it just blends it out. So, like, you don't see any lines when it comes to my hairline. You don't see anything around my chin or underneath. Like, it's all blended in quite well.
Makeup tips 101 from Nicholas.
I will tell you, though. Trish. I will tell you, though, there was a couple times, maybe once or twice, where many I walked times into work when I was in my old job, and my assistant, who I love and I miss him, he's the best. He came into my office and he was like, Nick. I'm like, yeah, what? He's like, you have a line. I mean, like, a line.
I mean, like, bowling.
Because what happened was, it was the winter season, but I hadn't run out of my summer season color, because obviously I get darker, not dark, but, like, I get color in the summer, so you gotta have to, like, go up a bump, you know? Like, you pick a different color for your skin tone. But, like, I hadn't run out, and I was gonna buy more, so I was using it. And I was pasty at the time, and there was, like, this straight-up line on my face.
Pasty.
And that's why you use a brush to blend.
Blend, bitches, blend!
I actually pulled out of my driveway the other day, and I was, like, almost at the stop sign at the end of my road, and I realized, holy shit, I didn't blend. I turned around and went home.
That happens to me when I forget my cell phone. I'm like, oh, fuck, I have to go back, because I can't live without that thing.
And this bitch last night left her cell phone in her car, and what she first went to when she couldn't find it was, Nick took it from me and is hiding it as a joke.
That was a confession that I made to her. She didn't need to know that. But then since you're going to throw it out there, okay, so yesterday when I got to the bar, I took all my equipment, my bags that I have where, like, the microphones and everything for karaoke is in, and my computer, and I went in and I set up, and I'm like, I'm sitting at the bar, I was like, where's my phone? Excuse me. And the first thought that came to mind was, this bitch is fucking with me. She took the phone and she put it under the counter and she didn't tell me, and now I'm wondering, but I'm going to play it off. I'm going to be like, I'm not going to react. I'm just going to pretend I'm going to go outside and have a smoke and then just go to my car and see if my phone is there. And if it isn't, this bitch is going down.
And, so, and, like, he just, like, I'm outside taking a 5-minute break, and he walks out to me and tells me that. And I'm like, why would I didn't even think to take your phone. And I'm like, this bitch come throw me under the bus for nothing.
Meet me. Done.
She hates me.
No. No, I love her. Are you kidding me? That's my boo. All right. So listen, my weekend really wasn't too interesting. My grandmother has been in the hospital for, I would say, the better part of 5 days, where she was really ill. We thought that we were going to lose her. I flew my mother up last Tuesday or Wednesday. She came up and family came up, et cetera. So it's been a little hectic running around all week, but she's pulled through. It looks like she'll be released tomorrow, hopefully, or maybe the next day, but she is doing a lot better. And so that was pretty much how I spent most of my weekend. It was either working or worry about where my mother was, what she was doing, and how she was doing, and making sure that all those things were taken care of, but she's good. And that's pretty much all I did aside from work. What did you do?
Same. I mean, I worked. Saturday, actually, I went out with a friend of ours, and I saw a lot of people, and it was nice. I socialized, and we had a good time, and yeah. Yeah, that was really it. What did I do on Friday? Oh, Friday night, I was such an adult. It was kind of gross. I went home, I watched a movie, and I went to bed early, and then I got up and was productive all day, and I was like...
And then she called me while she was watching a movie.
I did.
We were having a conversation.
Oh, yeah. But
yeah,
that's...
Yeah, but that's... But you don't remember calling?
No, I do, but I just wasn't talking about that.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, Hans is going to be like, you two cryptic bitches, y'all up to something. He sent me a message. Hi, Hans.
What did he say?
He goes like, what's going on? You two are being cryptic on the show. And I'm like, oh, we can't talk about it, but, you know, that's all.
I'm pregnant.
You're going to throw it out there?
Oh, fuck, we're recording.
Yeah, you're going to need a plan C, honey.
Yeah. No, I need a man with money. Well, because that bitch up and left.
That makes two of us. All right, so
just
listen.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Oh, can we talk about that for a second?
Sure. All right, listen. First of all, I am too old for that rapping shit. One, go.
I don't rap, but for some reason when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Dr. Evil's rap from Austin Powers, and I learned it, and I don't remember why or when or how, but I can't forget it at all. And so when Chris confirmed that he needed to spend time doing his paper and studying for his finals, I was like, all right, well, what are we going to do? Because that's 2 weeks in a row. Let's do something funny. And I was like, oh my God, I know this rap. And it's super weird, but why don't I rap that? And then you sing Just the Two of Us because you actually have a good voice. And I'm like, I am literally giving the world my hidden talent. Like my one thing that I don't really tell people because I'm kind of ashamed of it, but I love it.
But here's the thing, right? So he says, like, so we're going to do this rapping thing and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and I'm listening to him. Perfect. Nailed it, right? We go live. And of course, he stumps.
I had one stumble.
Yeah, that just one, but it happened. And I was like, why could I should have been recording what you were doing when we were taking shots of tequila.
Stop yelling at me.
I know, just a little bit. But anyway, so we have some stories. And of course, we also have Dr. Evan Goldstein. And with 12 minutes to 7, we're going to try to get through the first half as soon as possible because we want to make sure that we get the good doctor on time. So I'm going to, of course, jump into the first story for the evening. And we want to talk about Angela Ponce. So we've spoken about her before. Angela Ponce is actually a Miss Universe contestant from Spain. She is the first transgender woman ever to actually compete in the Miss Universe pageant. And the pageant was last night. She actually made top 10.
That's amazing.
Wait,
hold on. Okay. Yeah, okay.
So she made top 10, and she did an amazing job. She was awesome, and
the she's whole, beautiful.
She's gorgeous. The whole thing in general was just absolutely surreal, right? Because this has never happened before, and it was a huge day for the transgender community. However, I was left feeling a little jaded by it, and I wanted to sort of kind of talk about it a little bit, right? Because fine, she was a transgender woman that made it to the Miss Universe pageant. She is from a Spanish-speaking country, which typically, you know, it can be very tense when you're talking about the LGBT community in Latino America or in places where, you know, machismo is very high. And that's typically the case in a lot of Spanish-speaking countries. But that really wasn't my issue. The issue that I had is that she made it onto the telecast, and she did an amazing job, and I'm super proud of the fact that we finally have a woman who happens to be a transgender woman represent a country in a pageant. But what I feel that
a transgender woman.
A woman.
Yeah, I know.
Who happens
but
to be transgender.
Yeah.
You know, it's we need to acknowledge the fact because that's the thing. We're putting labels on it. She's a woman.
Yes, no, I know, but I think what I'm just trying to say is that the feat here is not that she's a woman, is that she is transgender. Yeah.
But for that very same reason, I feel that the network that's running the Miss Universe pageant sort of kind of probably put her on the top 10 just because of that.
You think?
I think so, and I think she's a gorgeous woman. Not taking anything away from it. But I'm feeling kind of, well, two things that really bother me, right? First of all, why are we still having pageants? The objectification of women really should not even exist at this point. It's a little, you know.
But the thing is for the, I think it's,
for, what it stands
for, the women
for is
that
good.
Compete,
yeah.
It's not about that. It's about more than that.
But for everybody else, what is it all about? It's all superficial. It's all about how someone looks, you know, and they're promoting
presents themselves and looks.
Well, of course. But, you know, it's a sense that, you know, this is what you should look like. That's the message that it sends to all the other young ladies out there or transgender youth that are growing up and saying this is what you should aim for. And if you don't look like this, you might have an issue. Or it might be a problem.
Physically, I think you're right. Yeah.
In that aspect. So yeah. It left me a little jaded that way. And it always has. I've always felt that way. But when it comes to Angela, she's gorgeous, beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. And I'm super happy. Makes me proud that you know, she made it on there on her own merit. But I think that the network sort of kind of took it and ran with it and said, we can, you know, we can get headlines with this. And really, I think it took away from the moment itself of her being the first transgender woman to ever compete in a Miss Universe pageant.
I don't know, because I mean, you're right. They could have rigged it in any way they wanted to for publicity, whatever. But the scoring or the way that the judges are made to actually judge, it's very by the book. I mean, they have bylaws. Like, it's a thing. Like, it's very strict. And so I wouldn't say. I mean,
so was our presidency, and look what happened.
That's true. That is very true. And I mean, that's a completely different topic.
I'm just saying. You know, it's again. Listen, I don't want to take away from her achievements. It is a beautiful thing, but I think that the idea that someone needs to be 95 pounds wearing a bathing suit running through the stage to gain recognition either for their country or for the sake of winning a one-year ride in New York City and having the opportunity to work for a foundation that you want to support, et cetera, et cetera. It's in those aspects, it's good, but the objectification of women sends the wrong message to the youth that are growing up that are probably suffering from obesity or identity issues or suffering from the fact that they know they may never look like that. And you know, I don't knock what they do. I just think that, you know, I think that as a nation and as a globe, as a world, as a species that has evolved over the years, I think that we're better than that. And I think that we need to probably think about what we want to do with these types of programs going forward and the message that we want to send.
Yeah, no. And you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because recently Netflix released a movie called Dumpling.
I love
it. Or Dumplin'. Mm-hmm. And I recently watched it. Did you watch it?
I did not see it yet.
So it's really good, actually. I really enjoyed it. I also love Dolly Parton.
And Jennifer Aniston is in it. Come on. Hello.
But it chronicles, you know, a story of a mother and a daughter, and the mother was a beauty pageant queen, and she still hosts their, you know, whatever, local beauty pageant for the high school girls. And, you know, you can be Miss whatever. I honestly forget the name of it. But her daughter, who is overweight, what you wouldn't think of as conventionally beautiful, decides that she wants to compete as a statement.
Uh-huh.
And then through the process, she and her mother connect in a way that they've never been able to connect before, because they both now understand the struggles they both are going through.
Yeah, but where does she go to go get a makeover?
Oh, that's my favorite part. Yeah.
She literally, like, she said,
that's
right,
why I turned it on, actually.
I'm this, you know, I'm all this. This is going to take a lot of work. And who do I know that can literally take all of this and make it into something presentable? Again, there's that objectification, but that's not the point of the movie. It's gorgeous, really. I saw the previews and I really want to see it, and we encourage that you do. It's awesome. She went to the drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
She literally went to drag queens and said, all right, bitch, make me up.
That's not exactly what happened. So you have to watch the movie.
So
I'm not going to spoil it for anybody.
Don't.
Because there's a lot of layers to the story. But yes, she ended up going, her and actually two of her friends ended up getting coached by two drag queens. And then those drag queens showed up for the pageant. And it was like their children on the stage. They were like, oh,
they were so proud.
And it was actually, I don't know, it was kind of empowering and powerful. And actually, can I ruin one part of it?
Go for it.
I don't know if I should.
Spoiler.
I'm going to.
Spoiler alert.
Turn it off. You don't want to hear it. So at the end, right before the end.
Ruin the end.
No, it's not the end.
Okay.
But like right before the end, the mother, Jennifer Aniston, who is beautiful and always wears this one specific dress because that's the dress she won. Won her, you know,
her crown.
Her crown. Thank you. She couldn't fit into it. You know, she not that she was any bigger in the movie, but she's in the movie, she's playing an aging woman, and as you age, your body changes.
Well, how old do you think Jennifer Aniston is?
I can't tell.
She is an aged woman. She just happens to be freaking gorgeous. She's another, like, for example, Cindy Crawford. You know, these women, I mean, they're absolutely, and again, now I'm objectifying women, right? They're gorgeous. You know, the Cindy Crawfords, you know, you've got Jennifer Aniston, you know, they're gorgeous women. Angelina Jolie, I mean,
Julia Roberts,
you know, they're awesome, you know, but there it takes a lot to make them look that good. Just remember that.
Mm-hmm. And I want a team like that. Anyway, so at the end of the movie, like I said, she couldn't fit into the dress, but Dumplin, her daughter, was like, I have an idea, hold on. And she went and got one of the drag queens to come help her mom. And the mom shows up on stage in a dress that was the drag queen's dress. And so it's like,
she took the drag queen's dress?
And she wore it on stage. And I was just like dying. Because, I mean, it was, like, you could look at, like, drag queen dresses, they're flashy. They're beautiful, but they're flashy. You know what I mean? They're not as sleek and elegant as what the mom was wearing. They're about flash and pop and being beautiful. And she showed up on stage in this fucking dress, and I just like lost it. I was like, I can't. I literally can't. But it was a really good movie. And it just kind of like shows like that we are all human, and that we are all one community, and that we all want to love and support one another. It was actually... Yeah, it was a good movie.
It's all about the human experience. But either way, listen, I didn't want to minimize, Ángela Ponce's achievements. Again, this is
a huge thing.
It's a huge thing to have a transgender woman run for Miss Universe. So my congratulations to Ángela Ponce from Spain. She did a great job. She's looked absolutely amazing and stunning. But again, you know, just I was just left feeling a little iffy about the whole experience, at least from my perspective. I'm sure that her perspective was completely different. I saw an interview that she gave in where she was actually very teary-eyed because she goes like, you know what, I'm going to step on that stage and some young boy or some young girl is going to see me and say, I can be whoever I want to be. I can be my true self. And eventually get to that point and not have to be afraid of doing so. So in that sense, that was an amazing message and an amazing thing to see, right? Because it's never been seen before on the pageant. So, you know, congratulations to her.
And can I just say, like, looking at these photos...
She's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous, but those fucking cheekbones. I don't know how she didn't win.
Yeah, she was gorgeous.
Those cheekbones are amazing. And her body... And so let's be honest, she probably walked better in heels than any of those girls.
Oh, she was sashaying up and down that walkway. She did good. I will say though, my fellow countrywoman, the delegate from Puerto Rico, made the top five along with Venezuela, the Philippines, and
who won?
Two other Philippines did. Mm. Yeah, she was gorgeous. However, the Philippines, the people of the Philippines have been a little jaded. The person who won is a whitewashy Philippine woman, right? It's not your typical indigenous person. It's probably someone who married, who happens to be probably half Filipino and half white, and married into, you know, a family, ended up in the Philippines and started running. I'm really not sure so much about her backstory, but the Filipino people really are feeling a little jaded about the fact that the woman who is choosing their country to represent them as a delegate for the Philippines did not really...
Oh, wow. I'm looking at a picture right now. Katrina Gray.
Yeah. Didn't really represent what actual women from the Philippines, right, should represent. And so I was reading a lot of those commentaries online. I'm not a pageant person. I just want to throw that out there. 7:01. Shall we go to Dr. Evan Goldstein after the break and then come back and wrap up our stories?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, so listen, we're going to give you some music. When we come back, we have Dr. Evan Goldstein with us for Tales from the Tale. And here we go.
If you need my hands to pull you up above the earth, well, I will lift you up to show you just how much you're worth. 'Cause we need to be loved. So we need to be loved. If I had you here, I'd wear your heart just like a crown. And if it beats for me, then I would never.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was the incredible Anthony Starbill. We Need to Be Loved. Love that song. Joining us now is Dr. Evan Goldstein of Bespoke Surgical for this week's installment of Tales from the Tale. Welcome back, Dr. G.
Thanks. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Yeah, she's the hoe.
We're talking about happy holes.
Oh, happy holes. Oh, happy holy days. So, as you can see, it's just two of us today. Chris is, he's got the day off today. He's studying and writing a paper for finals. So, we had to make sure he can focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
We can have a good time. Just the two of us.
That's right. Just the two of us.
Have you been listening?
Have I been listening? No, I've been busy doing some work. Why? What's up?
It's just the start of the show.
We opened the show with that song, Just the Two of Us.
No, yeah. I've not been listening.
Well, if you have a chance, just go back and listen to the opener, because you'll be like, wow, Nick is a mess.
Yeah, he is. So what's going on, Dr. G?
Nothing. What are we talking about tonight? Are we talking about double penetration or Bruno?
I mean, so Holly said we should talk about double penetration.
Yeah.
And those were the two that I was torn between, so...
I thought we were talking about Rudolph, really. Like, seriously.
So, I mean, yeah, I guess let's talk about double penetration trouble.
All right. So did you guys read it? What's your take? What's your thing?
So I read it, and the story itself is very enticing, to say the least. like it, at one point in the blog post, you said that, you know, it made you turn, you got turned on. Yeah. Well, I was a little turned on too. And then I reread it today, because, you know, that's what we confirmed. And I just wanted to make sure I had, you know, my brain around the whole thing. And I was like, that is a fucking hot story. Like, it's super hot. But then, but then I think about it, and like, we all know I'm a bottom, right? We all know I'm a bottom. And I have no problem taking a sizable
okay,
member.
Listen, I will confess, I've done it before. Me.
What?
Me. I took two.
Oh. All right, so that's good.
Maybe you need to go see Dr. G.
But that was successful.
It was a very long time ago. I remember that we were, I had met the couple at a bar. I was probably like maybe 22 at the time.
Oh.
And I met a couple at the
bar.
Your
butthole still had elasticity, so you were good.
Of course it did. And yeah, I bounced right back. Are you kidding me? It was like, a ride in the park. So, you know, I met this couple and we hooked up, and I was riding one, and the other one said, do you mind? And I'm like, no, just so, make sure you're very lubed.
All right. So the other one, how did they come about inserting themselves? Did they come from the front?
Well, I was sitting on the guy that was laying on the bed, and then the other one came from behind me. And so I pushed me forward and sort of kind of
made more room.
Yeah. Oh, honey, there's a lot of like stuff here. But back then I weighed like maybe 150. So I was very tiny at the time.
Yeah, he was twinkie.
You could find that hole with no problem.
Oh, my God.
So we should probably, for the listeners, just talk about the story, right?
Yeah, I know. Because now, yes, let's talk about the story.
So one of the clients went to an undisclosed gym and was just going into the steam room for just the routine steam. And then, you know, obviously caught an eye of someone, and then it kind of started to get a little bit frisky. I guess he kind of exposed his cock, and they both were like beyond attracted.
But can we say, like, reading your story, I was like, there was, in my mind, like maybe 30 seconds between their first interaction and insertion.
Oh, totally.
And I was like, okay. That may be rape. That may be rape, but okay.
Well, exactly. But it was like, he went with it, right? So the guy that was gave him a good look in the steam room, exposed his cock. His cock was beautiful. And then all of a sudden, he was like eating his ass. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I guess another person entered the steam room as well. And then the original guy started to fuck him from behind. And then this guy just came up out of nowhere and just started to fuck him from the front. And again, it was kind of like a little bit of a rape scene, don't you
think?
That's
what it sounds to me, yeah. I would have been like, what are you doing? This is my hole.
Yeah, but I think it wound up turning the guy on, which I guess it does for a lot of people. I mean, it turned me on. I was a little hard listening to it.
Oh, same.
Well, I will tell you, reading some of your tales on medium.com tends to be like a mini erotica novel, right? mixed with all the good, you know, amazing
information
that you provide to your readers, and of course to our listeners when we actually do Tales from the Tale. But it is like a mini erotica.
Oh yeah, it was. It's totally unbelievable. And you know, the scene played out, and there was no blood, there was no pain. Everybody got off. Everybody ejaculated. It was like, you know, amazing from what the client says. And then the next subsequent day, he had a bowel movement that was bloody with some pain. I had seen him before from some minor issues. Came into the office, and then he had kind of two fissures, which are these small little tears that developed towards the front and towards the back. And that's exactly where the penetration was, how they kind of entered him. And the friction of that, you know, there was no lube. It was all spit and steam and sweat from the gym. So obviously it was not the most optimal.
You're making it even more hot right now, but keep going. Sorry.
And then, you know, I did some stuff in the office. I used this chemical, which is called silver nitrate, which basically cauterizes the exposed muscle and the exposed skin that was kind of torn.
So what does that mean, though? Like, I know what cauterizing means, but like, how does that? I just don't understand how that would help a fissure, I guess.
Yeah, it basically encourages the scar there to form. So it's like a good kind of agent that works in that capacity. So you basically just kind of put it on a little bit where the exposed skin is cut, and then it kind of generates new scar in that area.
So
and it builds. It needs to build like strong scar, right? Just from, because shitting and having sex, there's a lot of pressure that is happening. Mm-hmm. So we have to kind of encourage healthy scar and good scar. Now, he did the right thing by coming to see me quickly. So this happens a lot just in the bottoming world, where people will be like, "Oh yeah, it's cool. It's a small cut. It'll heal. I'll do some little stuff," and then it never really fully heals.
Right.
And then if you wait too long, I need to then do a surgical procedure to kind of reset the stage so that it heals the right. I think a lot of it is like, you know, after a day or two of doing, you know, baths and like preparation H or kind of suppositories, if things aren't getting better, I implore you to kind of see someone like me early on, because we could do certain things to get it to heal.
Okay. In this specific instance, this person had no signs of blood or damage until the next day.
Correct.
Which is surprising to me because, like I always do when I'm on the phone with you, I tell a story. So I've had plenty of situations where after my sexual experience, there's been blood. I've kind of come to a place where it's not necessarily common, depending on the sexual situation, if it's like rough or not rough, but like I can kind of tell when it's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it always happens generally following the instance. So the fact that it didn't follow the instance directly is weird to me, and like why it came the next day.
Yeah, again, you're right. I mean, I think it happens many ways. There are certain times where like just it was the friction that caused the small little tears. There was so much lubrication that maybe it wasn't so evident at that time. And then taking a shit, you know, it was still pressure to go to the bathroom, where finally the scabs that developed that were actually holding there, they opened up and started to bleed. So I think I see it both ways, where some people have pinkish blood post-intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have frank blood post-intercourse. Some people the next day, they see it. And so I think it's kind of many different scenarios of it. I think some of the things we have to look at is how do people prepare for anal sex?
Right.
So
right.
Like the douching, the shower hosing, all of that causes a lot of trauma. And that sometimes sets the stage for people to have blood during intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, you have to think about it, that in the ass itself, there's really not a tremendous amount of pain fibers further up. So when you're using douching or shower hoses or you're doing something along that, a lot of times there may be significant trauma and you don't even know it. Then you engage anally, having sex, And then finally, after, you start to see the kind of sequelae of having irritation. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it does. Can I ask though? Would it be correct to say that during the actual experience, right? You're engaging in a sexual experience, and it's euphoric, and you've got all this adrenaline going through your body, and all of these senses being rattled. If we want to call it that,
that's what I would call it.
Could that be the reason why initially he didn't feel the pain of the tearing when he was being penetrated by two people?
Yeah, totally can. I mean, obviously the endorphins are rocking and you're feeling the whole motion, you know, and then he probably went right after to take a shower. So, you know, you would think that you would see pinkish blood, but sometimes, you know, you clean it off, you're using soap, and maybe there was some irritation that was there. And then the following day he was able to concentrate that indeed there was some tears that are there.
So now that we're actually talking about the whole blood and bleeding thing, how normal is it? And when should somebody be nervous or reach out to a doctor like you if they are seeing blood in their stool or post sexual experience? Like,
I mean, realistically, if you're engaging the right way, you shouldn't see blood post sex at all.
Oh, so I've been doing it wrong for 31
years.
Well,
yeah, you have to use your dilators. You have to use, you know, your jack and all those, you know, amazing
But again,
people.
I think it's analyzing it to try and figure out, all right, well, what is the culprit to it? Is there something that's underlying this? Like, is there a hemorrhoid that's internally that's getting irritated? Are you over-douching? You know, where the actual, let's say it's a shower hose or an enema kit that you're using, is that causing a lot of irritation in the area? And then that's predisposing you. When you look at the HIV and STD rates, they're still so high in our population. And a lot of that has to do with kind of that irritation anally. And so the question is, again, is trying to analyze, how do you engage? How do you kind of prepare for engagement? How do you then actually engage? What are the certain things that you're doing? And then how do you kind of take care of yourself post-engagement to see what the extent of the issue is?
Right.
And so, yes, periodically everybody has blood, right? I mean, you know, you shit the wrong way, you know, you're traveling, you're constipated, or you're having sex and it's just a big dick, or it's just the wrong angle. You know, that can precipitate that. That may be a one-off. Right. But if it's something that's persisting, let's just take one episode. Let's say you bottom for someone that's quite huge, it tears, or you have some blood after, and, you know, a couple of days it dissipates, it goes away, and now you're bottoming back without having any blood, no issues. I don't think you necessarily need to see someone like me.
Okay.
If it's where you bottomed with that guy, it bled, 3 to 5 days later, you're still bleeding. There's a little bit of irritation. It waxes and wanes. It's not getting that much better. Then, yeah, you should see somebody. If it's somebody that every time you're bottoming, you have pink and there's irritation that's there with blood, yeah, you should see somebody. We should make sure that we're not missing something really easily treatable.
Right. Can, you know, when I first started experiencing sex and anal sex and all of that stuff, I was kind of told by my, you know, fairy gay mother, if you will, that, like, no matter what type or how much you have sex, anal sex, generally you will always experience some type of tearing, whether you physically feel it or not, or if you physically have signs or not, because it's such an abrasive way to have sex, anal sex itself. Is that actually true? Am I, depending on the situation, am I tearing or in some way causing damage to my anal cavity every time I have intercourse?
You shouldn't be. Specifically, if you're doing all the right stuff, and again, I'm supposed to see you at some point, right?
Yeah, January.
It's a meat mincer. We'll Prepare yourself.
You keep bailing on me. It's all good.
One time, and it was not my fault.
It's a meat mincer. I hope you're prepared.
I'm all prepared.
But went through the meat mincer.
He's never going to be on the show after January, everybody.
The show is canceled.
Don't say that.
With that being said, I mean, I think a couple of things. If you're using the right lubricant and you're understanding the bottoming techniques and you're using and kind of you're sitting and playing with tops that actually know the right way to engage, No, you shouldn't bleed. There shouldn't be issues of friction. There's ways to kind of diminish that. And I think that that's what we're trying to do at Bespoke is kind of dispel the myths that are there and really kind of teach people to analyze sex in a little bit of a different way to make sure that people are doing all the right things and being successful at it. There are tons of people that even go beyond from fisting to huge dildos, you know, and going crazy with it that know that they're not bleeding and they're able to understand their anatomy and the angulations that they need to do to achieve what they want to do. So again, I think that you and I just need to kind of evaluate to make sure that there's not one thing that could be causing this. Right. And I may be able to fix that one thing and then you never have it bleed ever again.
Just cut his whole asshole off. He'll be fine.
He doesn't need
No. Please. I love that thing. Like, it's important to me. We're keeping that. Don't cut it off. He's going to put me under and now it's going to be gone. Thanks, Tommy.
But, you're welcome.
But it's you bring up a good point because in you were talking about friction and in the article or the blog, you talk about friction a lot because they didn't use lube. And the amount of damage that can actually cause not using, plus having two dicks in there on top of not using lube. So if you find yourself in a situation like you're gonna be double penetrated, or maybe you're just gonna have one dick in your ass, but you have no lube, what should one do? Is spit okay? Is spit
Don't
not okay?
Use Vaseline.
I just like, but I mean, if you're in a steam room, you're not going to be carrying. I mean, maybe some people will be carrying lube in with them, but
you
like,
never know.
Some people probably wouldn't. Like, what should one do to protect themselves as best they can in a situation like that?
There's no right answer. If I knew, I would tell you. I mean, I think that again, yes, you know, there's many different scenarios that we're all going to find ourselves in that you don't necessarily have the right, you know, stuff to use, and you improvise, but just understanding that, like, all right, well, there are certain sequelae and risks associated with that, you know? And the reality is that if the scenario leads itself to a really good scenario, sometimes it's worth it, you know? Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's kind of understanding, like, if you're going to engage in certain activities and you know you're going to do that, be prepared, you know, just like the Boy Scouts, you know, understand where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing.
Right.
And also one of the things, like the way lube is used from a friction perspective. What is he laughing at?
I don't know.
I just thought to myself, I own a lube badge.
What does that even mean? What's a
lube? For the Boy Scouts, you know, you have that kind of badge for this activity. Own a lube badge. You know, it's like,
what's a lube badge?
You get a badge for carrying lube that's appropriate on you all the time. No, just continue. See,
I got it.
I didn't.
I got it.
Obviously, she was in the Girl Scouts. She was baking cookies.
I was in the Boy Scouts, but I wasn't. Never mind.
In the wrong troop.
You were definitely in the wrong troop, girl. Let me tell you something.
I mean, like, I had plenty of fun at summer camp. Don't get me wrong. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Shit, I lost it.
It's fine. I have another direction to go in.
No,
so
no. Okay. So minimizing the trauma there. So
there we are.
You gotta use whatever is available to achieve that.
I'm sorry, Dr. G, but I couldn't help myself.
All right, Tommy, you're getting a lube badge for Christmas.
Yay!
You are getting a lube badge. You have two lube badges. It's perfect.
Oh, my God. Right. So,
with that said, I mean, I think a couple of things. One is they sell these lube shooters, which are really great. So they're like syringes that you could use, especially for the bottom, that kind of has a small catheter that you can literally put up your ass and squeeze it internally, okay? And the nice thing is that it kind of pre-lubricates the entire canal. Huh. So there are some people that even, like, you know, their ass is quite tight that if they're going out, you can kind of pre-lubricate so that if you know you're going to be bottoming, dude, you're already ready to roll, right? Also, you can have some lubricants with you. He's still laughing. Make him stop.
I'm going to mute his mic in a second.
No, because when you said that, immediately I thought to myself, what happens when someone's been, you know, bottoming for quite a long time and now you've pre-lubed and you're walking around with a little spot of lube?
That's why they have Depends, Tommy. You can get Depends.
Well, that's why you can't do that. Person wouldn't be inappropriate, right? Or like,
you got to know your body, Tommy.
But you know someone's going to try that shit. They're going to be like, oh, I can handle this. And halfway through the club, they're going to squeeze and be like, oops. Now I got a spot. Now they're going to know I'm pre-lubed and they're going to just take me to the bathroom and have their way with me.
Hey, that might work out for the better.
And they're going to take their fucking lube badge away. They're going to be like, you don't deserve this. You know, you lost your badge.
You had two badges, now you got one.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you have to pre-lubricate like hours in advance. You know, it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to excuse myself and go to the bathroom. And then, boom, lubricate yourself, and then you're ready to roll. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I think the issue is, how do you empower the bottom? We have to empower the bottom to not be the submissive type and allow kind of that to be the nature. It has to be ownership. It has to be an understanding of the science. It has to be really analyzing every situation to make sure that, yes, it's sexy, yes, it's hot, yes, it's fun, but also that, like, there's a certain way to engage, and that's kind of where we're at with that.
Well, I mean, I would say that the bottom also has a responsibility not only for their health, but the health of their partner. So, you know, if they're prepping and they're taking the necessary steps to ensure that they're properly lubricated, then they're going to minimize the risk of, one, hurting themselves and also exposing their partners to something that possibly they shouldn't be exposed to.
Yeah, and also, again, them also getting STDs related to all of this. You know, the STD rate and HIV rate is still so high because it comes into contact with blood vessels, irritation. And so if now we're creating a barrier with good lubrication and we're kind of really understanding the way to decrease that friction, you can understand how it's going to minimize the trauma, which minimizes the contraction of all of these issues. And it becomes more of a community-based stuff, because a lot of what we're doing is not just one partner, is multiple partners. It depends on the scenario. There's a lot that's going on. So again, blood out your ass is not normal. It can be if it happens for a specific reason and then it heals. But if it's something that is abnormal and persisting, see someone, because most of the time it could be treated quite easily early on, where now we can get you back to the right engagement.
So I want to talk about something specific before we move on to your comments in the beginning part of it, because I think it's important to talk about STDs, like perfect segue, actually, because in this situation, this gentleman actually ended up contracting something. He was on PrEP, which is great, but I think it's important to talk about, and I was hoping you could just talk about the fact that you thought it was a good idea to swab and tell us a little bit about what happened.
Yeah, and I think, again, first off, remember, from an STD perspective, if you're ever getting tested for STDs, I always say it, but you have to demand that you get blood work, anal swabs, oral swabs, and a urine screen. Okay, make sure they make you piss. All right. If they're not doing all of those things every time you get an STD check, even if you're getting a PrEP check, all of those should be done. If they're not, you should request it, demand it, because there are times where you have an asymptomatic anal gonorrhea or chlamydia and you don't even know it. And it doesn't show up on the blood test, but yet if you swab, it is positive. So one, make sure. Two is sometimes the irritation is actually from the STD and it's not healing or getting where it needs to be because there is an undiagnosed STD. So if you're bleeding, that should also be part and parcel to the examination. It's not just, oh, hey, give me a cream and let me go out of my way, you know, let me get out of the office because it's what we think is a hemorrhoid. So I think it's us as, you know, doctors need to be more educated on how to treat, you know, our specific community, but also we as clients need to now say, hey, look, this is what we need to check and know where you need to be with that. Mm-hmm. With that said, you know, an STD can be really bad. An STD can cause bleeding. It can cause an abscess. It can cause non-healing fissures and tears. There's a lot that it could be. So until the way I live is basically it's an STD until proven otherwise. and how do we work backwards from there? Now, yes, we should all be using condoms. We get it. But the reality is that we're not. And it's okay. I mean, I'm going to support you regardless of which way that you roll with this.
But
yeah, I'm listening.
But even in the situation of this young person that was being double penetrated, even if you're wearing a condom, you can still experience the pain, the suffering, and the tearing that he experienced.
Oh, 100%. It was more of like, how do we decrease other STD issues? And then the question is like, if he didn't necessarily, if he wasn't positive for chlamydia or gonorrhea, would those fissures and tears healed without me having to do anything? And the reality is that probably, because they were quite small, it wasn't such a huge deal, but it winds up just compounding the issues.
Gotcha.
Right. Did that answer your STD stuff?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, and I just want to be clear too. So this gentleman in the story was on PrEP, which is, again, great. But he did end up having an anal swab, and he came back, I believe, gonorrhea, was it?
Right, I think so.
And I just want to – I think it's important to hit that note and hit that topic, because I continue harping on it. Just because you're on PrEP does not mean there aren't other things that can, you know, harm your body. So you have to take care of that as well. And so, like Dr. Goldstein, every appointment comes with a complimentary swab. Thank you.
Yes. And I think also you have to analyze life. We talk a lot about it, is that – you know, there are other ways that we can decrease STDs as well. So like, if let's say you've had 2 to 3 STDs a year, okay, I think the reality is, and you're not using condoms, there are certain studies that look at using antibiotics prophylactically to decrease your chances of an STD. So again, I think that using that, so like, for instance, the treatment for some of the STDs is doxycycline. Okay. And then you take it for 7 days, twice a day. But you could, let's say you had a high risk exposure, like this guy, he could have taken doxycycline that day and doxycycline the next day, and it could have decreased his STD chance of almost 70%. So it's not for everybody, but if we're putting ourselves in certain situations that are a little bit risky, which we all are, mm-hmm. it happens to everybody, that with that said, it's understanding that, oh, you know what? This is happening a little bit more frequently than I want to in my world. What can I do to kind of prevent this from happening? And there are lots of things that we potentially can do.
Right, of course.
So let's say you have someone that is aggressively having these experiences, right? Often, more often than most, and they're constantly seeking that particular option to be able to actually get themselves ready for such an event of having that engagement. Do you think that by chance their body could actually develop some sort of immunity to the antibiotics that they would take often if they're constantly doing this?
So I don't necessarily think it would be an often thing, but I think that a lot of people look at that and say, maybe. But the reality is that think about how much antibiotics they take when they get infected. Mm-hmm. And so now you look at it and you say, okay, 2 doses of an antibiotic periodically for a high risk exposure versus 7 days each time they're positive and multiple different antibiotics X amount of times a year, I think the reality is that most people would choose the 2-day quick, easy dosing versus the other. So, and this is not for everybody. I think it's, you know, circumstantial and it's really looking at this, but I think it's imploring, again, the bottom to look at their world and risk assess and make sure they're seeing physicians that have the capacity to take care of this and not judge and not look at it in a shameful way, mm-hmm. but to say, all right, great, this is how you engage. Let's figure out what we can do to minimize risk.
And I think, too, it's important. I just want to say that I think bottoms need to love their hole a little bit more. You know what I mean? It's not just for the person that's sticking it in.
It's precious. You got to take care of it.
It's your baby. You got to love your hole.
It's the only one you have.
Yeah. And, like, you don't want to destroy it because you want to use it for your entire life.
Well, I mean, you know, Dr. G could probably reconstruct it, but, you know, it's still take care of it.
I see a whole gamut.
Nailing it.
I see a gamut of clients where, you know, a lot of people that follow us on Instagram and through you guys and all of this, you know, they're part and part to our culture and the community and really understanding exactly what you said. But I see a lot of people where they realize how detrimental not having that orifice available is. I mean, people come in crying and upset. I just operated on a kid who, you know, it's the most devastating thing. He lost a relationship because he couldn't bottom, and now he's trying to engage with another person, and it's painful, it's bloody, it's irritating, and it's such a huge emotional psyche to everything that we're doing if that's not available as well. So, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think that we have to look at it in many, many ways to make sure that you're doing everything right for the longevity of your whole.
Yeah. You know, I want to keep talking about the story, but you just brought up another patient of yours, and I wanted to, I don't know if you can talk about it, but I wanted to ask, why was he having such a hard time engaging anally?
So he had anal wart surgery from another surgeon outside the city of New York. And it's super common for a lot of surgeons to just have the capacity and the understanding of all I really care about is that you're shitting correctly. I don't really care or understand the sex part of it.
Right.
And so, you know, when someone has anal warts and you remove them, you get a lot of scarring, especially in the young 20-year-old guy. It's just noted that that happens. And so after surgery, when you're healing, it's really important to make sure that we're doing certain things to prevent the scarring from happening, but also dilating and stretching and working to get that person back. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that early on post-surgery, they get what's called a stricture, which is a lot of scar, and it contracts to the point where now you're trying to stick something in there and you can't relax, or it tears, and then you wind up getting tears in that scar line. So when that person goes to a regular surgeon that's not gay, that doesn't understand, they look at it and they're like, are you shitting? Yeah, I'm shitting. Oh, everything looks fine. No problem.
Right.
But the second that person goes to engaging, it tears, it gets irritated, it's painful.
Okay.
So I have to do a procedure, which is basically kind of opening that scar so that now the skin, the muscle, the scar can breathe and start to accommodate the sizing of what we want. And it's not, I mean, the surgery itself is a straightforward surgery, but it's, you know, a couple weeks of healing. Yeah. It sucks. It's a shitty, literally a shitty situation. But what winds up happening is that with the use of Botox and the techniques that I am doing, I'm able to get this person over the next 2 to 3 months back to bottoming and back to engaging. And it's you know, they come in, it's detrimental to them, crying, hysterical, and it just becomes a terrible situation.
Right.
So I think, again, understanding what you need to make sure that you're seeing surgeons, if you're getting anal surgery and you're a gay bottom, part of our community, I implore you to listen to these podcasts, read, look at some of the options that are out there so that you're going into this understanding some of the issues that we're having in the community.
Right. So there are two more points I want to hit before we, whatever happens with this conversation happens. But I wanted to talk about two things. One, in the article, the blog, you talk about how the front and the back of the anus is the most tender or sensitive part. I can't remember exactly what you said, but how Botox can maybe help with that. And I was hoping you could speak to that a little bit. But I also wanted to talk a little bit, too, about how you have therapists that you work with that can actually help you prep and protect yourself if you want to take two dicks.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I think the first is whoever created us, there are a couple of flaws in the human body, but one of them is anally, towards the front and towards the back, is just notoriously a very weak spot. And so when someone tears, 90% of the time it's going to be towards the back, which is like the tailbone area of the actual anus, and towards the front. And so you can imagine when someone's double penetrating you, you're hitting, the person that's behind you is hitting the back and the person that's in front of you is hitting the front. And that friction is just not fluid, right? If there's one cock, you're able to kind of generate that motion so that the force and the pressure disperses. But now if there's two cocks going at the different pistons going at different speeds, going in and out, it creates an issue.
Right.
And then it could easily tear. So again, I think one is using that silver nitrate builds good scar so that now the tissue there is very tough. Also using butt plugs and dilators and kind of stretching yourself at that skin line towards the front and the back allows more skin to grow. I use the analogy a lot of if you and I are going to the gym and we're lifting weights, you get calluses on your hand where the bar hits your hand. Same concept. If you're sticking a bar, which is the butt plug, up your ass, over time you're going to create good tissue. Because the body's going to kind of create new skin in that area that's going to now decrease that force. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
A little armor.
That makes complete sense. But I guess if you're prepping, right, because that's something that you like, but you're not always going to be double penetrated, right? You're going to have one dick sometimes, and that's great.
Well, I would hope it would be most times.
If you're prepping to
she's trying to earn that badge.
No, well, if you're prepping your hole for an event like this or things like this, are you also stretching yourself to the point where it's like you kind of have a loose hole now, or are you just building the skin?
You're right. I think that there's two issues that you need to think about. There's three. One is skin, the other is muscle, and then the other is scar. Right? Those are the three things that there is. One is when you talk about looseness and elasticity, for the most part, that is the muscle component to this, right? That like, oh, I'm going to have sex with you and your hole is already opened for me, right? That dilated component of it.
Right.
And I think that you're right, but as you are doing the dilation and stretching, the goal is for you to also be doing contraction. And it's like going to the gym. Some days you're kind of doing biceps and the other days you're doing triceps to kind of stretch your biceps. So I think it's a combination. And that's where the pelvic floor therapists are working. Now, I'm telling you dilation a lot because it's post-surgical where I'm trying to help the skin and the scar form really good tissue there, right?
Right.
But once we get you to the point where you're bottoming, the goal is now how do we do both? How do we develop muscle in the area that's going to keep you tight and allow you to engage with for the rest of your life, but then also teaching you kind of muscle memory, skin memory, and the neurological part where now you can relax when you need to, especially in those situations that it's double penetration.
Right.
Right. You know, so again, I think it's part and parcel, all of the above.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Say I don't have any issues with my asshole, but I am...
Are you going on vacation or something?
No, but I...
Is there something...
I just think that this happens a lot in our community, and there are a lot of questions that I have about it.
She's getting ready for something this time.
I've never yet been doubly penetrated, but I am going to see Dr. Gene. We'll see what happens. Anyway, just kidding. But seriously,
no, he's not.
I completely lost where I was going with this.
Sorry.
Thanks.
No, you're saying like if you know you're going to be double penetrated, something you can do?
No, I'm saying if I don't necessarily need to come see you for a surgery or just a checkup or anything like that, can I make an appointment with your physical therapist to prep myself for...
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that we work on is a lot of people think that there's nothing wrong with them, and then the probably the best situation even before you see the physical therapist is to see me so I can make sure, where are we needing to work? Do we need to work on the skin line? Do we need to work on the muscle? Is there something that's physiologically an issue that's going on that I need to treat? If everything is all awesome, they should see me once a year just to do the pap smear, STD screening, a full evaluation to make sure everything is good. And then from there, I'll be able to know, all right, well, maybe they can just get there without seeing the physical therapist and just kind of listening to what we're talking about now to get them there. Some people where they're so tight that we need the physical therapist to try to see if we can get them to fully relax and accommodate where they want to go. Sometimes a physical therapist will send that patient back to me and say, hey, can you give Botox into the skin line and relax that skin a little bit to see if we can achieve what this person wants to achieve? Okay. So again, I think it's a symbiotic relationship between all of us, but it's more of creating a community of just people that care about this that are then able to say, hey, all right, how do we just achieve whatever that person wants?
Okay. I actually have more questions. Is that okay? Can I keep talking?
One more.
Go for it.
And I got to go home and
all right. I have one more. Okay. So positioning, if you want to be doubly penetrated, what is the best position to do it in?
There's not many because realistically there's only... got to be a person in the front and a person in the back.
Well, Tommy had two people in the back.
No, I had one in front of me and one behind me. No matter which
way you're looking on somebody. I see. I got it. Yeah. Now.
And no matter which way you flip it, right? Because you can be laying on somebody and the other person can come at you.
Sometimes with your legs up in the air.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, I guess you could do like side one person. Like, it just becomes, yes. I think it's more of the ease ability is one in the front, one in the back.
Or you can actually have them both laid down with their legs crossing in and both cocks up and you can actually sit on it.
Yes, you can. But I think that if you do it that way, the pressure points for the most part are not the front and the back, right? Mm-hmm. They're to the side because of how they're hitting the actual hole itself. Mm-hmm. So with that, if people like that position, that's a hard position because it's just not the really way that things kind of dilate. So I think it's understanding those positions. But one of the things I think people should do is like with their partner, if they want to go double penetration, is bring a dildo into their play and start with a small dildo, check the positions, see if it works, kind of manipulate around, see what feels good, what doesn't, and kind of set the stage. So again, it's dilating again, but it's simulating the act.
Right.
Or if you're going to go right into it, really make sure that those two tops really are communicative. And that you're able to really make sure that it doesn't become like a rape situation or an uncontrolled situation, right. Which none of us want.
Valid.
All right. Well, you just said that you have to get going because you have to put your...
What's the last one, Bob? What's the next one? What's the last one?
I was just going to ask because in the blog, he talks about how he can't wait for maybe this same experience to happen. So clearly he's back on the saddle, and I was wondering how long it took him to get back on that saddle.
It's usually about 2 weeks, and it's usually the first week of healing, the second week of just kind of trying out that saddle to make sure that it works. You know, again, the thing is, it's super hard to go from nothing to huge things. So it really just needs to kind of, you need to work that out mm-hmm. and figure out kind of how to accommodate that.
It's kind of like hitting the lotto.
It's like hitting the lotto, baby. You know? Absolutely.
You go from nothing to too much, and then you just lose it.
God, I would be so rich right now.
Well, you know, you go from living in an apartment to living into like a massive house, and then you realize, oh shit, I don't want to cut this grass. No, what did I do?
Oh my God. I don't know. I just want to say that again to our listeners, if you haven't had a chance to check out his blogs on medium.com, you got to, because the stories are great, they're informative, and honestly, Dr. G is great. So
yeah, and if you need to, you know, reach out to them or even look them up, you can go to bespokesurgical.com. We have all of their links for their Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, along with their website right on the post. So, you know, there's no shortage of ways that you can actually get in contact with the good mm-hmm. doctor.
And also, I do want to thank you on behalf of Gay Talk for hooking us up with HelloTushy.com.
Yes!
We are super excited about our bidets.
Yes, we got some portable bidets courtesy of Bespoke Surgical and, of course, Dr. G. And it was amazing. So I'll tell you a little quick story really quick. So I was actually pulling up the website, right? I wanted to pull up the website to make sure we had all the data and everything and be able to tell people where to go.
Sure.
And so I put in tushy.com. Don't do it. Do not go to...
It's like porn or something, right?
It is porn. It is an absolute... The first image is like a massive cock and a big vagina in your face. Don't do it. Do not go to tushy.com.
So instead of saying that to me, he said, hey, Nick, go to tushy.com. And I'm like, but it's hellotushy.com. He's like, just go to tushy.com. And I literally was just like...
Ugh. So either way,
when's the last time you saw a vagina? Next?
Oh, college. Ugh. College. It
did
was college.
Did you ever play with one?
Yeah,
he did.
I was drunk and stupid and in college. What do you want from me?
It's okay, honey. No one's holding it against you. So, Dr. G, thank you.
I feel shame.
Thank you so much for joining us. As always, you are a just a wealth of information when it comes to all things tushy and bottom. And I love it. And we so look forward to your segment. And, of course, next month's segment, because it's going to be just as amazing.
Well, it'll probably be the following month.
The following? Oh, that's right, because it's January.
Yeah. So, that being said, when we come down, I don't know if you can, but it would be great maybe afterwards, because I know it's toward the end of the day, to grab a drink or a bite or something and just...
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah, I would really like that.
Don't do it.
That would be awesome.
All right.
But no, thank you. And then just to all the listeners and people, if there's questions that you have, by all means, DM us. They can get in touch with you. Things that you want to talk about, certain things that you would think would be valuable to our community, please, please, please let us know. I mean, we're trying our hardest, all of us, to kind of hit what we think is important. But there's certain things, especially generational. There's different things in each generation and stuff like that. So I think hit us up. And I appreciate it. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. And I'm so glad you earned two badges today. your lube badges, baby.
He's about to get a third one. But Dr. G, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode.
All right, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Always great seeing you. Bye.
Merry Christmas. All right, so that was the incredible Dr. G, as always. You know, he joins us month after month, and he gives us such wealth of information. And, of course, you know, you have Trish that constantly just, you know, just absorbs all of this. I'm like, I'm thinking she's probably going on vacation.
No, it's not
about... I don't know about it.
I'm not going on a vacation. I just, like, I don't know what it is. I think my favorite part about the show is interviewing people and just, like, hearing them, and then it sparks an idea, and then I'm like, oh, that's perfect. We need to talk about that. That's just like my favorite part about the show.
So when should I sew your badge on your jacket?
You can't. My jacket's a professional jacket now, so you're gonna have to put it like on the inside of my bag or
something. I can put it on the inside of something. I'll get you a badge.
All right, thank you.
Double down badge. I'm gonna get that one. All right, so listen, I know that we have several stories to still cover. I'm gonna let because we are an hour and a half in, I'm going to let Nick pick a story, and then we're going to cover that and then wrap up the show.
Yeah, I think I'm going to cover two quick things.
Okay.
And they're not big talking pieces, but they're exciting. And yeah, so Barbie. Every gay man who has a sister
played with
his
Barbie.
Sister's Barbie.
I don't have sisters, right? You might have. I did not, but I had lady cousins. Mm-hmm. And so, lady friends, like they said on Tu Wong Fu. Yeah, you know, I'm just fortunate to have some lady friends that happens to have an Adam's apple. But that's not what I was talking about. Anyway, no, I had cousins and they had dolls and stuff. I don't remember if it was Barbie specifically, but go for it.
Well, so Barbie and Ken are your traditional, I mean, they are like, to be honest, it's the epitome of the problem with America. Two white heterosexuals who are perfect in every way, mm-hmm. and everybody strives for that, and that's why.
I wouldn't say they're perfect, right? Because Barbie's missing her vagina and Ken is missing his penis.
Valid.
But go for it.
But that being said, there's no real representation of homosexuality in the Barbie collection. There is a couple out of Arizona, mm-hmm. Matt Jacoby and Nick Caprio.
Oh, another Nick, of course.
And they were looking for some type of present for their niece, and they wanted to get two Kens. And
they were looking for, if I'm not mistaken, it was the bridal set, right?
It was a bridal set.
The wedding set.
Yeah, the wedding set. But they wanted to give their niece two Kens, and I guess she was the flower girl, and have her a part of it as well. So there is a flower girl, and there are plenty of Kens. So
just not in the same box.
Not in the same box. So what they had to do is they had to buy a bunch of different boxes and put them together in one box and give it as a gift. And in a video that you see in this story, this girl opens it up and she's so excited, and she literally says, "Oh my God, it looks like your wedding. That's awesome." And that is something that Mattel does not make. They do not make a same-sex or same-sex couples kids, you know, sets. Thank you. And so this, this couple has kind of, initiated a process in which Mattel is considering making a same sex, wedding Barbie.
Well, they're
kit.
Actually meeting with their marketing and with their, design team, to see what they can come up with. Right. Because they reached out to Mattel and Mattel said, you know, sure, we'll entertain the idea. Obviously, you know, we've moved past that point in where everything that's representative of what a typical relationship should look like is not the norm anymore, right? And I think that what this couple did is smart and very intuitive, and in knowing that, you know, this is the right time, the right place to actually reach out to a toy maker and say, you know, there's a lot more than what we used to think there was 50 years ago. And I think that you're missing a huge market. Not only a market, but an opportunity to really educate people and provide someone peace of mind and knowing that what they see every day, right, with their two loving uncles, this little girl, is normal.
Yeah.
And it's not something that they're not typically exposed to because of the lack of availability.
So there's a quote, which is perfect from a perfect segue from what you were saying. My niece only knows that Uncle Matt loves Uncle Nick and Uncle Nick loves Uncle Matt. Kids are taught to hate. They're taught to have negative feeling about those who don't fit into a social norm. It's time we bring positive examples into a commercial market. Toys are a tool for learning, or teaching. Toys are a tool for teaching. And that's why it's a perfect segue, because you're exactly correct. Having these toys available to kids at young ages will help them realize and normalize something that has been society's abnormal cliche for so long. Love is love. And more and more and more, you're seeing more homosexual couples, whether it's lesbian, gay, transgender, whatever it is, get married and have kids. And these kids are forced to face a world in which they don't see their parents advertised out there.
No,
and
so, not only that, but they also have to go out into a world and face other kids that see what their parents are as being wrong. And then they get bullied. They get, you know, torn for it, because really, they have no visuals to really represent that.
Right. And I think the biggest fear, fear of losing a child is your biggest fear, obviously. But besides that, it's like, as a gay couple raising a child, you know it's going to come. And you're waiting for the day your child comes home crying because somebody said something about the fact that he has two dads or two moms. And you're waiting for that to happen. And you're preparing as best as you can for that. But until we normalize what parents are in society and what parents raising children are in society, gay, the LGBTQ community is going to feel that fear they shouldn't have to fear. And those kids shouldn't have to fear being attacked by somebody in school.
And that fear can go one of two ways. It can go either very horribly wrong, and you have someone who then, you know, has to face life with emotional and traumatic issues going forward because of what society imposes on what their regular life should be like. Or you can have a Zach Walls who went out and defended his mother's, right, at the state Senate. And then 5 years later, 5-6 years later, he is now an elected state Senate official with a LGBT agenda and a platform that's really changing the way that people see same-sex marriages and same-sex families, which is very important.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And, you know, it's funny that we got into that conversation over a Barbie, but that's what a Barbie's impact can actually have.
It's amazing.
And I'm really excited that these guys, we should reach out to them and see if they want to chat
with
us. Okay.
We should.
Another thing for me to do.
Nicholas, make it happen.
So, and I want to close out the show. So my first, as a gay man, my first experience seeing LGBT people presented in a public light. I don't want to say a positive light, but a public light for me was Brokeback Mountain. And that movie came out, and to be honest with you, that movie was too long. Like, it needed to be trimmed a little bit.
I'll tell you something, though. That spit and shove was quite the controversial theme.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Jake Gyllenhaal definitely needs to go see Dr. G.
Yeah.
But what's really exciting, and we're going to end on a positive note today, is that Brokeback Mountain is to be preserved for all time in the Library of Congress, which is super exciting. It was one of the 2018 movies that were picked because, as they say in this article, oh my God, my computer froze! as they say in this article,
the article's from Tyler Rhodes.com.
It's being saved because of the cultural, historic, and aesthetic importance to the nation's film heritage. And that's something to be really excited about and proud to know that it's not necessarily a historic film, but it represents...
well, to me, it was... To me, actually, it is. It was one of those...
It was a historic film for us. Yeah. But historically, it wasn't telling our story. It was telling stories that have happened within our community,
mm-hmm.
within individuals, that the secretiveness,
Well, to me, it was groundbreaking in the sense that it received critical acclaim, right? And this was one of the few mainstream movies that actually dared to show two men doing what was perceived to mm-hmm. be an actual act of sex. You know, that scene, I left that theater a little shook. I was shook when I saw this movie because it's not something I was used to seeing, unless it was a gay film filmed by a gay production company or a gay, you know, director. It was really something out of the... Or it's not something that you would see in theaters, right? Like, I'm used to seeing gay movies that I can relate to on Netflix. People make these movies, they release them, and they end up on Netflix. Not something that I thought at that time that I would see in a movie theater. But it was there, and it was important, and it was actually quite the scandal when it came out.
No, yeah. You know, I was 17 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
I was just, I must have just been in college. It had a huge impact on me.
Yeah, I mean...
it was this moment of like, holy crap, mm-hmm. they're allowing a movie like this to be shown nationwide, internationally.
Yeah.
And it represents me.
And to an extent.
Because
you got to think these are two closeted men that were going out, you know, hurting
pasture. It didn't represent the fact that I'm definitely not closeted. She's not closeted. And I was not closeted at 17. It was exciting and comforting to see something like that because I grew up on like Pretty Woman, which I love the movie, mm-hmm. and don't get me wrong, but like every love story, whether it was a good love story or a kind of messed up love story like this mm-hmm. was, it was a man and a woman, and mm-hmm. this was two men, and it was mainstream.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was a big shift for our community, yeah, I think.
It really was.
I have to pee. Let's wrap this up.
All right. I was just about to say, I was like, my bladder's ready to explode because, you know, I had a shock top here and it's going down. Anyway, all right. So we've got two more things very quickly that we're going to cover. First, we'll start off with the gay talk term for today's episode. Nicholas?
All right. So your gay talk term, of course, brought to you by unicornbooty.com.
Not really.
Yes, it is.
No.
Is actually because of what we were just talking about. Cowboy and Yeehaw. Cowboy or cowboy it, and cowboy it means to swagger or strut. It actually also says, also see Butch It Up. So I'm gonna flip the page to Butch It Up and I'm gonna read you this. Butch It Up means warning to act manly in the presence of friends who don't know or the police who do. Butch It Up. May Tilly's got us spotted.
Hello.
Some of these are so weird, but I love them.
All right, so we also have on this day in gay history. Do you want to take this?
Of course, brought to you by unicornbooty.com.
Maybe.
Was the Hungarian parliament adopts a registered partnership bill. So in 2007, December 17th, 2007, Hungary adopted this bill. The law gives the same rights to registered partners as to spouses, with exceptions for adoption, IVF access, surrogacy, and taking a surname. But it was a step.
in the right direction. This was in 2007, mm-hmm. and today, 11 years later, as a result of the issues that happened in the EU and that decision from the High Court, right? Same-sex partners have a lot more protections and a lot more opportunities to be actually move with their partners to wherever they need to go to and be able to actually work and be residents of their partner's country of origin.
Correct.
So that's awesome. All right. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. You guys are amazing. And thank you for sticking with us and lending us your ear week after week. If you love our show, make sure that you go rate and review the show on your favorite podcasting service. This helps others know about the show, and it also ensures that it becomes more visible within our podcasting community. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser. You can, if you already know, also support us on Patreon, which gives you access to our live video stream, which our Patreons get access to week after week. And of course, Patreon is a service that allows you, our listeners and viewers now, to support our show with a monetary donation of anywhere between a dollar or as much as you want. And we collect those monetary donations every month. And we're super appreciative of the fact that you guys are amazing. So thank you.
Right. And so next week, we are actually going to do an episode. So we're going to do a Christmas Eve episode.
That's right.
And it may be a pre-recorded episode. We're trying to figure out the logistics. But get ready. It'll be exciting. It'll be full of cheer and mirth and homosexuality, which I know you love for Christmas, because every gay ruins the family Christmas party.
Thank you
to our guest, Dr. Evan Goldstein, for joining us again today show for this month's Tales from the Tale. Also, many thanks to the great doctor, Holly, and all of the staff over at Bespoke Surgical for the wonderful gifts we got this year. We got our tushies.
That's right.
Our very own portable bidets from HelloTushy.com.
Yeah, do not go to Tushy.com. Seriously.
I mean, like, live your life.
You're going to be like, surprise.
I was surprised. You can get your own by visiting HelloTushy.com. And just so you know, we are going to try these out. We're going to review them on the show. And hopefully we're going to have somebody from HelloTushy.com on the show.
Absolutely.
So yeah, let's put a rubber on this
All right. Well,
our show is available on our website.
I love it.
GayTalk20.com under show and episodes. It's also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio. Nick won't shut up. And he announces. You can find us on social media. Facebook, GayTalk 2.0. Instagram, GayTalk 2.0. Twitter, at GayTalk20. You can email us at GayTalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
I'm doing the pee-pee dance. You can actually visit our website and leave us messages. Just click on the Contact Us tab at the top. Do all that good stuff. Our phone number is 334-429-8255. That spells 334-GAY-TALK. We love you. Our show is available every Monday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that show or live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I love you. I have to pee. Thank you. Y'all have a good night. Bye! Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.